Hi everyone, welcome to Empower, my power, your power, our power. On today's episode, we will be exploring the journey of a business leader across many verticals and a true visionary in the fields of healthcare, education, infrastructure, sports and more. I'm really happy and privileged to have with me today Dr. Ajinkya D.Y. Patil, Chairman of the D.Y. Patil Group. Welcome, Ajinkya. Yeah,
pleasure to be here, Meenakshi.
Thank you so much for taking the time out for us. So, Ajinkya D.Y. Patil was born in Mumbai and is the son of late Pushpalata Patil and the iconic man himself, Mr. D.Y. Patil, a Padma Shri recipient and founder of the D.Y. Patil Group. I know Ajinkya personally from the time he did his MBA from Richmond College, UK, with a specialization in marketing from the London School of Economics as well. Since then, Ajinkya has gone from strength to strength, building the legacy of the group. He has been awarded an honorary doctorate by University of Central Lancashire, UK, for his achievements in the field of education. Ajinkya has also served as chairman of the Central Board for Workers' Education by the Ministry of Labour, Government of India. I mean, the more I say, the more there is to say about this wonderful man. So such grand accolades and impressive achievements apart, Ajinkya is also a man of many passions. He loves his work, is very spiritual too, which not many people know, loves art, loves to travel, and of course his wonderful family. So without further ado, let's find out more about Ajinkya and learn what it is to be a true leader in every sense. Over to you, Ajinkya. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm good. It's a wonderful day. Good to have you here.
Yes, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Tell us how your journey has been so far as a business leader across many verticals, like I mentioned, healthcare, education, infrastructure, sports and more.
Yeah. So firstly, I think I wouldn't express myself to be a leader really. I would say I'm more of a team worker. Team worker would also be too much of a corporate sort of a title to give. I rather feel that when you're running an organization, you run it, it's almost like a part of your family.
Absolutely.
An extended part of your family. And that's how we've been operating, not since I took charge, but it's been the days from my grandfather's days.
Mm-hmm.
And the legacy continued with my father. And I was 16 or 17 when I started tagging along with my father to different parts of India, to different parts of the world. I went with him to many different places. So my experience really came from watching and observing him.
Right.
And I think that has been a great learning curve for me. Of course, we had to do our degrees and formal education because education is the field that I am in. And it's important. But I think the real value of what you learn comes from observation from people mm-hmm. who are successful, who have also failed in a sense. It's not always that you learn from people's successes. You learn from people's failures as well. So the key to every business would be really to observe mm-hmm. what others are doing. And everybody gives values, whether it's the corporate titan sitting in a boardroom or the sweeper cleaning your floors.
Absolutely.
Or the driver driving your car. And there's learning all the time.
Yeah.
And coming from a field of education, like they say, Shikshan actually means learning every moment.
Nice.
So in actual sense, I think we inculcate that spirit.
Okay. Yeah. Very well put. And it's so right. It's everyone who, no matter who they are, have their experiences to share.
Yeah.
And we can gain from, you know, their successes and failures.
Sure.
Equally, I guess. Okay, so how do you manage to listen to the many markets and keep pace with audience needs?
So I think what's happening is we really get involved only in the initial stages of the project, that is its inception.
Okay.
So during inception, we are fully involved with the project. So there's a lot of due diligence done before we get into any project. And there are, of course, many team members working relentlessly in the background. So I would say these are the unsung heroes of the group.
Right.
Who really given those vital inputs.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's market intelligence, a need for something, or to create a need for something. Because in many sectors that we've started, the need wasn't really there many, many years ago. But we anticipated the need over a period of time. So
yes.
You have to look at a product curve. So if the product doesn't exist in the market, so you create a need for that product, anticipating the future. One example I'll give you, not in my case, but generally in the case of what's happening, is technology.
Absolutely.
Nobody would have imagined 20 years ago that technology would encompass us in such an overwhelming way.
Yes.
So similarly, there are sectors in the education sector as well, whereas we envisage biotechnology, bioinformatics, certain courses in engineering, blockchain. And so these are the areas you need to anticipate. And once you anticipate, perhaps in the beginning, it might be a bit of a struggle because the early adopters are very few in the market.
Absolutely. And so you're testing the markets, yeah, you're starting fresh.
So it takes time. Mm-hmm. But if you hang in there, eventually, I think if you have a mission and a goal, you reach it.
Mm-hmm.
It's seldom that you fail if your vision and strategy is extremely clear.
Yeah, so you took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say, so you're also a visionary because, you know, to look ahead, to anticipate, you know, to create something that doesn't exist for the first time. So that is pretty smart as well. And yes, please add to that.
I think the key to any successful business is to be unique.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're doing something what everybody does, then you're not really unique.
Correct.
So you might be successful as a businessman, but how do you differentiate between what you do and what others do?
Right.
And I believe in that. Of course, business models, there is space for enough people to do enough things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you truly differentiate yourself, then I think success has a different sort of meaning to you.
Correct.
And I always keep thinking in that way. Of course, now, when we started, there were very few educational institutions because, in a sense, my father started privatization in the state of Maharashtra. So you have people like Patangrao Kadam, my father, and a few others to name. Karad is there.
Mm-hmm.
So these were the early adopters. Of course, now many more people have come into the sector. Online is also disrupting education greatly. So these are a few things that I would like to express.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Thank you. So tell me, the DY Patil Group consists of a knowledge city,
yeah,
a university, yeah, a school, yeah, a hospital, among many others.
Yeah.
What role do you play in each aspect? Of course, I understood from the
So there are several universities, there are several campuses spread across Maharashtra, a few overseas as well, and other parts of India as well. And one thing my father did was, at a very early stage, made sure that the family has its role defined, because I have my brothers also who are involved with the group,
right,
and we all have our particular areas of operation. So I think that's also legacy planning in a sense, because when he did this, we were wondering as to why there was a need to do something like that. But then if you look at other corporate success stories or other corporate failures, they've happened because there has been no clear partition or division in the rules defined by the founders. And I think that clarity we have as a family, so all our roles are defined. So whether it's my brothers or me, we are clearly defined what each one of us should do. And we bring our combined strengths to sort of take this group further and add to its success.
Okay. So what is under your
belt? So I'm the chairman. I'm the chairman of the group currently.
Correct.
So I'm the chairman of the group. Then I'm the chancellor of my university in Pune.
Mm-hmm.
And I overlook education and healthcare.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell me, which of these interests you the most?
So that's a tough question, because I'm a workaholic, let's put it that way. I like to work 24/7. My mind never stops thinking.
Correct.
So I'm constantly working. But to be honest, I wanted to be a scientist.
Really?
So if I had my
you
way...
You did share that once,
yeah,
yes.
So if I had my way, I would probably be a scientist somewhere doing some research and probably explored or invented something which would change humanity or the world. Maybe I'll still do it.
Yeah, I know. I remember my son Vivan and you having a talk once where you were encouraging him that, you know, to try out technology, applications, invent, because he always says, I want to invent something.
So speaking about Vivan, I was greatly fascinated, and I'm fascinated by children.
Yes.
So when I meet these young minds, and how old is Vivan?
Now he's 15.
He's 15, but I remember talking to him when I think he was 11, 12.
Correct.
So I think even at that age, there is a lot of creativity in these individuals.
Absolutely.
So kids really have that innocence of thinking out of the box.
Right.
And we as adults, if we just listen to them, There are many possibilities, but Absolutely. We just brush it away as a kid's, a child's imagination. Correct. But that imagination could lead to something everlasting and which could completely change the world. And Correct. The best inventions have come from creative minds who have thought out of the box,
Absolutely.
Whether it's Einstein or Tesla or any of these big guys, Elon Musk.
Yeah, of course.
Elon Musk is he's a great inspiration for me. Mm-hmm. And when I see these successful people, it's not just the aura that they build around them, but the sheer hard work, dedication, and commitment that these guys have for their
goals. The passion and the belief, right? Yeah, they believe in what they are, you know, pursuing or, you know, reaching out to achieve.
So to answer your question, a scientist.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So tell me, the D.Y. Patil Stadium hosted some of the biggest events in the country, like Justin Bieber's first ever concert in India. I think the only one. I was personally there. It was fantastic and so well organized. And so how was your experience hosting such a grand first-of-its-kind gig of one of the world's most iconic and popular artists? I'm sure there are a lot of followers who would love to hear the lighter side of things too.
So my brother Vijay is involved with the stadium.
Okay.
So he's very passionate about cricket. So it was his dream to create this stadium. And of course, Justin Bieber was a great moment for us because such a huge star coming to the stadium. And there was so much buzz about him coming to the stadium. And tickets were sold out. And but one unique thing that I wanted to share with the audience.
Please do.
we get a lot of pressure for tickets.
Of course.
So,
it's
just not tickets. Everyone wants a VIP ticket. So they want
to
be in the
or to meet the celebrity. You know.
Unfortunately, we're just the venue.
Of course.
And the event organizers are, it could be anyone really.
Of course,
So it is a bit taxing when such events happen, especially when there are games, whether it's the IPL or music concerts. So in a sense, I would like to go in a shell when they but it's a real pleasure and a really proud moment for us as a family to host such big stars. And
I'm sure your daughters must have loved it, like my son did.
They enjoy it. They enjoy it. So they also go and sit in their normal seats, really, to be honest.
Well, I want to always be like a true fan in the front. You know, I don't want to be far away, you know, to enjoy a concert.
So it's quite an experience. So managing the crowd was more of a challenge, and managing the perception of people calling and you not being able to please everyone.
Of course.
So that's a bit of a challenge, and it's sort of a bit of a bummer.
So pros and cons to both. Of course, it's a landmark moment, I understand. And then suddenly everyone's your friend.
Just be honest.
Thank you for the honesty. So tell me, let's talk about healthcare, since you're so passionate about that too. What a time it must be to be running a hospital. How did you cope during the first two waves, and what was the hardest part?
As a healthcare provider, not many people may know, because we're very low profile and we don't talk much about ourselves, but we have 8,000 beds across Maharashtra. We have large hospital facilities in Navi Mumbai, Pune and Kolhapur. There's a recent project that we've currently taken up, which is a public-private partnership with the Government of India. It's called the Grand Port Hospital. So facing some challenges on that front, because it's our first public-private partnership and the complexities of a PPP are very different to otherwise managing a
private hospital.
But my experience in COVID was something very unique, because I think when the first wave hit, there was a lot of panic in terms of people's perception about the disease. And there was so much fear around the disease. And I myself worked in a PPE for almost 2 months continuously at the Grand Port Hospital.
Really?
We set up 100 beds in a record time of, say, I think 35 days, if I'm not wrong. We set up 100 ventilators. We were able to save a number of lives. I lost two of my team members in that process, which was very, very unfortunate. And but our team was extremely dedicated, extremely committed. And what we felt is the true face of humanity comes out in the when you're faced with such a calamity, really.
Absolutely.
Because you see people from all sectors, all societies coming together. They sort of, it's like a sea of humanity, really, when you see. And my experience in COVID was very different because it emotionally rewires you.
Correct.
Otherwise, you're very caught up in your corporate world, in your systems and processes. But when a pandemic like this hits, it just makes you feel meaningless, or it just makes you feel that what is your existence in this whole sort of universal play?
And sometimes powerless, no matter who you are, what you have. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have or what age you are. Yeah. This hit everyone equally.
And I think it made us all sit back and rethink our lives.
Absolutely.
Whether it's saving the environment, whether it's your personal lives, whether your relations with other people.
Even basic health.
Yeah,
you know, people started getting more health conscious. So I guess it was... But you know, what a humbling experience, and also it has changed, affected the whole world, which is another thing, not just India. And I'm sure you've got a lot of good karma coming your way because of all the, you know, healthcare that you could have and you have tried your best to provide.
So when you speak of karma, I feel that if you can't do any good, don't do any bad.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's how I think.
Well, well said.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me, education is, of course, your heart, as you said. And how has the lockdown and subsequent school and university closures been for you? Are students beginning to come back to campus now?
So I think the initial wave when it hit, we felt that it would tide over. I was always of the opinion that it would not.
Right.
So we had a lot of brainstorming and sessions with our core team leaders. And they said, okay, 2 months, 3 months max, we'll tide over it. But I always thought that we need to do some future planning. And nobody believed me then. Only a few team members believed that. How long can a pandemic go on? Somehow the sixth sense or even the statistics that were coming in were contrary to what people were saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's still here. It's not gone. So we should be prepared for this. And I wouldn't call it the new normal. It's just a shift in the way we operate. So it did hit us very badly.
Right.
And it hit us badly in a sense that we could only take care of our institutes in terms of the reserves that we had. So once the reserves started getting exhausted, then the pressure to sort of collect fees from pupils and parents kicked in. And it was a very unfortunate situation because parents themselves were locked up.
Correct.
Their businesses were locked up. So their revenue streams were equally challenging.
Affected, yeah.
So to put pressure on parents, collect those revenues, then you have to pay the teachers because the teachers also have to survive. And
correct.
So it became quite complex.
Tricky,
it
yeah.
became very
no, it
complex.
Happened even.
And only after a series of meetings with the PTAs. And so there was a lot of background maneuvering. People don't know, but the education sector was affected greatly.
Absolutely.
And it's not been spoken about. Because there are thousands of teachers in the process. One area that we got affected greatly was the transport.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have so many buses. So those bus drivers, conductors, cleaners, sweepers, they're all out of a job.
Absolutely.
And while it was easy to say that online, you can continue online. But my heart weeps for these people.
Absolutely.
Because for 20, 30 years, these people have been with us. Their loyalty is unproven. Recorrect myself, and then you have to let go of these people, and these are really the people who need the money.
Absolutely.
Because these are in the range of 30,000 to 60,000, and without jobs, what would they do?
Correct.
But then the circumstances were like that, so there were some very tough decisions we had to take.
Right.
So our core focus was on the teachers, how to take care of the teachers, how to make sure that they get their salaries. Fortunately, I think all the stakeholders sort of cooperated. They empathized with the problem. Of course, you have a few areas where some people wouldn't cooperate. There's always an opposition to some problems. But those were minimal. So we were able to try it. And I think things are getting back to normal. The enrollments are now going up.
Right.
But the last 2 years has been tough.
Tough overall.
Yeah.
That's what I'm glad you expressed the other side of things. Because I've always heard parents complain, or why are we still paying fees? Why are we not getting more, discounts, right?
Right.
And they don't understand because I'm on the APP board, which is like a PTA of my son's school.
Right.
And we would get so much flack where they would be like, why are you not as a parent communicating this?
Right.
But what they don't understand is that anyway they had to spend more on then sanitization or, you know, training, online, you know, systems.
Sure.
So it's not that they were not spending money. It was just redirected for the new norm that was there temporarily.
So it's a complex question. It's a complex
yes.
question. I mean, I'm happy you empathize because you sit on the PTA.
Yes.
Who sit on the PTA would understand the problems.
Both
of
the sides, exactly. Yeah.
But there were also some people or parents saying that they don't have electrical charges, they don't have security charges, so their costs have gone down.
Yeah, so that's what. So that's, yeah, it's so, a tricky. Like you said, it was very taxing and difficult from all areas.
But your financial planning is done on a basis of a certain revenue stream that comes into an organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can change the goalpost.
Correct.
So if your expansion strategy is to set up 10 schools, you have a financial outlay for 10 schools.
Correct.
So there's a balancing. Some schools may be in profit, some schools may be in surplus. So there's a balancing that's made. So you can't look at an organization on an individual sort of basis, especially when you're large.
Of course.
For smaller organizations, of course, they're able to explain mm-hmm. exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a challenge for all schools, not
Absolutely.
Only us.
And so many industries, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ajinkya, you've been covered extensively talking about technology and innovation shaping the future of education. What does the future look like for the DY Patil Group of institutions, and how are you leading on that front?
So I think the future, what is for other institutions, will be pretty much the same for us.
Well, you're the visionary, so we need something more from you.
I would say that we started planning for technology years ago, when technology really didn't exist, because I remember the times when we had video conferencing links via satellites, when there was no internet in the country. So we were always technology oriented. We started digitizing and creating our own IP since many years. So most of our lectures are now digitized. I'm talking of higher education.
Right.
So many of our engineering courses, all these have been put on a digital platform, and we'll be ready whenever the online revolution does come. It's already here.
Of course.
But we still feel that it should be a blended system of learning, not entirely online. Because
mm-hmm.
what you learn at a campus is very different to what you would learn through an online system. So we have a robust plan for doing a blended system. In fact, some of our systems are already operational.
Mm-hmm.
They're not under the DY Patil brand. Because as you know, education is evolving globally
mm-hmm.
and to compete with some of the big boys is also a big challenge. We may be large in our sector, but we are a very regulated sector in
mm-hmm.
terms of government compliances, whereas the online sector is pretty much unregulated, and you could have no geographic boundaries, and
Correct.
The need for legislation and licensing is very minimal,
mm-hmm.
which is a bit of an unfair challenge, because
right.
where we have to put in so much funding into infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
online platforms are asset light.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we are making our space into that sector, and soon you will see some developments and announcements in the online space, but it's blended, it's more blended,
okay.
it's not purely online. So we're well prepared for that, and all the platforms have been put in place. We've had these for years,
mm-hmm.
so we were training, retraining, making our people understand how technology is going to change the world. So I think many people were reluctant initially as to why we would have such a plan. But after COVID, I think they've realized
yes,
that
of course.
There is no option, but the only option
right.
is to survive or perish.
Yes.
So I think COVID, in a sense, has accelerated the growth of technology, accelerated the growth of thinking, of change,
mm-hmm.
because many of the traditional people didn't want to change. They
mm-hmm.
said that we are okay in what we are. They're very comfortable in their space.
Yes, and for, you know, especially the older generations, like you said, also.
So online schools will be coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a rapid change over a trajectory of 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it immediately, because they'll coexist.
Correct.
But technology will evolve to such a level that after 15 years, probably you may not need to come to a school.
Right.
And the school will come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's AR, VR, and technology will evolve in such a way that we would be speaking through holograms or virtual reality. It just wouldn't be a 2D flat picture.
Correct.
You could actually get a feeling of touch and feel. And so it's going to happen.
I mean, there's a lot going on already, so I'm really excited for this.
And it's interesting to say that eventually I feel there will be a democratization of education, whereas you would not need to pay for education. So as a businessman, it's very tricky for me to make that statement.
Yes.
But it will happen.
Right.
And I feel that is the right way to progress in a utopian world. Because education...
Knowledge should be free. I guess in a way, right?
It should. Yes. Because still people don't have access to good education because of lack of funds or coming from economically deprived backgrounds. And with technology as an enabler, I think it will be available to all. What I see as great, that education and knowledge will be available to everyone, but I also see a lot of social unrest in the future, because if everyone has everything, then how do you equate good or average or a person who can't? So there are going to be a lot of social issues connected with technology.
So I think maybe the systems in place have to be,
So when you speak of systems, the systems are not able to catch up with technology.
Yes.
So legislation is maybe 5 years behind technology. And by the time legislation catches up, recently you saw crypto. We are coming out with a regulation for crypto. But crypto has been here for 10 years. So only now different parts of the world are waking up to this reality that something like crypto exists.
Yeah, absolutely. So what advice would you give to university students or young graduates who are graduating in an uncertain world, like you're saying? You know, it's growing at a fast pace with all the challenges.
So I wouldn't say uncertain. I would say dynamically changing.
Right. A more positive way of... I like that.
So there's no certainty in life, really. The only certainty is that you'll go one day.
Right.
You won't be on this planet. That's the only certainty which you can say with conviction. So I would imagine that children should not just focus on their degrees. Rather, they should focus on their skills. So they should be multi-talented, multifaceted, like a T-shaped professional. When I say like a T-shaped professional is... You have the depth of your particular field in the vertical, and in the horizontal, you need to have an understanding of the various aspects of learning. So for an MBA, for example, I'll give you, the MBA should not just have an understanding of finance or marketing. He should have an understanding of human resources, marketing, finance, understanding of the market economics. And he should have the entire spectrum that is responsible for the progress of an organization. Because if he focuses on only one thing, then he doesn't understand how the organization works. And in a dynamically changing world, the skills are going to change. The jobs are going to change. So unless you're able to adapt very quickly, you'll not be able to survive. So if say you're an engineer in a particular field and suddenly that field doesn't exist after 3 or 4 years, because AI will take in and automation and so many jobs will change. So programmers, coders, these guys will always have a future. But with AI, that future is also going to change. So I think in a sense...
Everything gets updated so quickly, right?
So I always have been championing this cause for the last 10 years that there should be a tax on technology. So if the AI takes up your job, and if thousands of people are going to be unemployed, then the AI should be taxed. So the tax can be used as social welfare for the people. So perhaps one day you may not need to work and AI is doing all the work. So machines will do all your work and you will be provided with everything. So so the world is changing. It's changing very, very quickly.
Rapidly, as they say. And artificial intelligence is a bit scary sometimes. It's revolutionary.
I think
it's very forward.
I think we outweigh the benefits to the problems.
Of course.
Like they say, a knife can be used to kill a person or it can be used to... cut vegetables or whatever when you're cooking.
Food.
So I think it's you should not look at it as something which is scary. So again, I think the need for regulation will be important. One example of AI I'll give you could be in the justice system. Now we have so many cases which are pending for years and years. And prisoners are not able to come out of systems because they don't get hearings because of lack of enough judges or enough manpower. So AI could probably... accelerate
that.
These
yes,
and
of course.
By some algorithms come to conclusion that if people really are innocent, they would not have to bear the brunt of waiting for so long.
Absolutely.
So this is just one where some humans are involved, where people are suffering.
Yeah.
So AI could be put to good use to places where really we are not able to accelerate solutions.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good. Well said. So tell us, what do you think is the secret to your success? You know, we have a lot of young listeners. We have a lot of people who want to listen to inspiring stories of empowered individuals like you.
I think I wouldn't call it a secret. I would just say it's the power of your conviction.
Mm-hmm.
I think once you decide what you want to do, you will achieve it.
Right.
And in my previous conversations, I've said to many people that it's a destination that you choose, really.
Mm-hmm.
Once you decide on the destination, you are bound to reach it, no matter what.
Mm.
Towards your destination, you may get hurdles. So as long as you decide, yes, I want to be there, you will be there. And
that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, so it's like even in nature, if you see, every day it's telling you that there are hurdles. So it's night and day. After a night, there is a day. After a day, there is a night. So it's a circle.
Right.
And
that's life.
Yeah. So some nights are longer, some days are longer. So it's like if I want to go to Delhi,
mm-hmm.
I may go there by train, I may go there by plane, I may walk or I may cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And every medium would take that much time. Walking mm-hmm. would take me probably a week, a train would take me 2 days, a plane would take me 2 hours.
Right.
So your goal is set, but you will reach Delhi.
Correct.
So what medium you take, how you evolve, what your strategy is, depends on how soon you'll achieve success. So success is guaranteed. There's no debate on that. And failures also guarantee success, because when you fail, you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when you learn, you evolve.
Right.
So there's no secret, really. I think it's the power of conviction and keep trying. That's it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you heard it from the man himself. Okay. So tell me, which three things are you most passionate about? And I know you've said healthcare, technology, but this could be anything.
Yeah, so education, of course, I'm very passionate about. Spirituality, I'm very passionate about. And technology also, I'm very passionate about.
Okay.
Education, I'm more passionate about because I feel that it can truly change society.
Mm-hmm.
The mark of a good nation is development, is progress, is directly proportional to the educated population that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And India, with its rich tradition and culture, has a lot to give to the world. So only now in the last, 10 years, there's been a momentum as to sort of looking at education in a different aspect, whereas either it was the Western style of education or the Eastern style of education. But I feel the Indian sciences are far more superior to what is being discovered. So
mm-hmm.
what the West is probably discovering today, we already have it written.
Written. Yes.
It's not that. So I think we need to look back a bit and amalgamate these two sort of philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And that would truly make a very different educational system. And that's a big passion with me, to amalgamate the best of the East and the West
mm-hmm.
and create an educational setup which has got the best of both worlds, really.
Mm-hmm.
The Western and the Eastern, because I'm a firm believer of the traditional Indian education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back to more than 5,000 years.
Yes.
So
scriptures and all.
So we say that, okay, you're outdated, you're talking of the past, but they were far advanced.
Mm-hmm.
They had far-reaching meanings and impact on society, and it really allowed us to live in harmony with nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what humans need to evolve to. And
yeah.
eventually a time will come where the world will say, yes, what India was saying is right.
Correct.
So we need to really absorb our own culture and think about how great it was.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about the past, we always talk about the future, we never talk about the present.
But
the time is now.
Correct. Well said.
Yeah.
So, speaking of your passions, you also speak about Guyana very passionately.
Yeah, yeah.
So, can you please share with us a bit about this?
So, Guyana is in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4-hour flight from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I would call it the jewel of the Caribbean.
Okay.
I love Guyana. I love its people. I have very strong links with the country. It's been a journey of more than 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, Guyana discovered oil. I'm the honorary consul general. It's my great honor to serve that country in Mumbai in India.
Mm-hmm.
And they've discovered oil. So okay. It's one of the fastest emerging economies in the world. So there is a lot of potential for investment, a lot of potential for new business individuals to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving that because of the geographical distance between India and Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a challenge to send people from India there,
right?
Because distance does play a role.
Mm-hmm.
Because
but if it's oil rich, it's like, yeah, literally you
so
have
all the
oil
all
mine.
The big boys all the big boys of the world are there.
Mm-hmm.
Exxon Mobil is there, the Americans, the British, so all the big boys are there.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese also investing very heavily in Guyana, but the time for India to move in is now.
Okay.
Because already the country is developing so rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also urge all the viewers to explore Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the possibilities of investing in this great country. Beautiful culture, beautiful people, and a very,
yes,
enabling sort of environment for business.
Nice. You've heard it,
yeah,
here first,
yeah,
from Dr. Patil.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ajinkya, now let's try and get to know you a bit more.
Right.
You as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were the learnings over the lockdown? Okay, you've shared quite a bit of it,
sure,
but something to add to it? Any new interests or hobbies you discovered during this time at home, maybe?
So learnings were quite a few, but the most frustrating was that you can't be a workaholic.
Right. Yeah,
because if you're a workaholic,
yes,
you can't really work. You,
yes,
know, and work from home is not my thing.
Right.
Even though we tried to do a Zoom. Fortunately, of course, or unfortunately, I wouldn't say, because of the pandemic, we were busy with the setup of the hospital, so I kept myself busy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but on a personal front, focused a lot on health,
right,
which otherwise was being neglected. Lost a good 10 kgs in the pandemic.
Oh, that's amazing. Well
changed
done, you.
Changed my diet and did a lot of meditation. I got back to my meditation with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
A lot of Netflix viewing. So,
like all of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Netflix viewing.
And family.
And also,
bonding.
I think,
yeah,
the bonding with the family was,
absolutely,
great. Because
right,
what happens is when you spend so much time with your family members, you're really connecting at a very different level.
Mm-hmm.
Because kids are not going to school, you're not going to work, and you're really touching
spending
on aspects which otherwise you wouldn't discuss.
Yeah, and spending quality time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like. And there was never a moment where I thought that now what?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much entertainment when you're sitting with your family. There's so much to talk about. There's so much bonding. There's so much love and affection. So I think it was a great time. And probably nature's way of telling us that, you know,
yeah,
be together, bond together. This is your true wealth.
Absolutely.
People,
yeah,
individuals,
yeah,
whether it's your society, your building, your neighbors, your family. So
I think there was a new appreciation,
yes,
for everyone, you,
yes,
know, like I had a newfound respect for everyone close,
yeah,
to us,
yeah,
including staff, you know,
yeah,
who stayed,
sure,
through, you know, the pandemic with,
of course,
you. I mean,
of course,
it was just such a, yeah, thankful experience, you know, mutually,
yeah. Yeah,
you know, that people could be there for each other in their little bubbles,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So we also had our core team members who never left us.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's what,
yeah,
you have newfound respect. And the ones who left, you see them in a different light too.
Yes.
And that goes for everyone, I, so, feel.
Yeah, I think when you're faced with such a calamity,
yeah,
you should not feel that a person is selfish.
Yeah.
I think he's looking for his own ability to sort of gain security.
And even cope. You know, everyone has different,
yeah,
coping
so
mechanisms.
So maybe they wanted to be with their,
yeah,
family,
yeah,
members.
No, I just say that,
yeah,
generally,
yeah,
for everyone. Like COVID,
right,
showed a lot of people what, you know, who really belonged in your life and,
right,
who didn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you may know like thousands of people.
Sure.
But, you know,
yeah, yeah,
so a good learning experience.
Yeah, the true colors.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So tell me, now I know you're a big travel buff,
okay?
And we've already discussed how, you know, because of COVID, of course, you know,
yeah,
travel has reduced to a large extent.
Right.
We try our best. But tell us your favorite travel destination and what's next on your bucket list of travel.
So I'm a travel buff. I travel for work. So I just want to add
that. Well, let me just,
yeah,
say, his lovely wife Pooja loves to travel too.
Yeah, so I wanted to add a note of any to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think if you, I were to rate, I would say Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the UK, of course, has been my favorite destination.
Right.
Many parts of the interiors of India, especially some of the villages in the south,
mm-hmm,
because I'm a big traveler on religious
right,
pilgrimages. So there are some beautiful, beautiful locations within India which have not been explored.
Right.
So those are some of my favorite places. But if you were to say rate internationally, I think the UK is my favorite.
Okay. And in the interior, is the villages? Is there any? Are there any names you would like to share, which are really nice?
You see parts of Kerala. You see Coorg. You see Kumbakonam. And I think the temple tourism is something that one should embark on, whether you're a believer or non-believer.
Absolutely.
Just the sheer fascination of your historical, cultural heritage. The buildings, the architecture, the designs, it's just incredible.
Right.
And you only begin to sort of understand its true value when you're actually there.
In person, yeah, yes. So, I remember I went to Murdeshwar once, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. And it was like 4 hours from Mangalore, this huge Shivji, you know, statue. It was stunning and so clean.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. The temple grounds and the temples and the, you know, was so beautiful, so architecturally, you know, intricate and designed amazingly. And the people are lovely. The food is so nice. Yeah. It's like prasad, you know, everywhere. Yeah. But even the normal food there. And it's on the seafront. I was like, this is like coming to a beach resort. Yeah. Like, you know, of course.
Better than a beach resort.
Better than, you know, it's so peaceful. It's beautiful. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Some of these places are so unexplored.
It's interesting you mentioned about cleanliness, and Prime Minister Modi speaks about it. He's been speaking about it.
Right.
We need to keep India clean. We need to. So I feel he's right in a sense, because when you go to the villages, you realize they're clean.
Actually.
The interiors of India are pretty much plastic free.
Mm-hmm.
They're environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. They know how to live in harmony with nature. So it's really the cities that have caused the pollution and
the masses of people.
So I think we need to sort of retrospect, because culturally we've been a very clean species.
Absolutely.
So the cities should not be polluted the way we do.
Right.
Yeah.
So we will talk about that later. Together. That's a whole different topic Okay. Yeah. So one final question.
Okay.
What are you working on next? And what do you have aligned for the upcoming years for the DY Body Group?
So currently I'm very engrossed with this healthcare project, which I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that would keep me busy for the next 2 years at least, till its foundation is set up. And of course, the expansion strategy is now more on the blended learning.
Mm-hmm.
So blended learning is something that we are focusing greatly on. Healthcare will be a big sort of a boost. Again, in healthcare, we are trying to combine Western and Eastern medicine.
Right.
So Ayurveda is also very big on our agenda. Mm-hmm. So we plan to set up a chain of both traditional as well as Ayurvedic hospitals across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if opportunities knock, then perhaps overseas as well. So we're looking at the Middle East. We have some active projects there, and we're looking at the Caribbean as well.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And I think you should even integrate the whole health care and the health and diet knowledge into it, because I actually recently did an Ayurveda cleanse.
Right.
And I thought it's fantastic. Yes. The things you can get out of your own kitchen, and you don't need to chase, international diet fads. Of course, some of them are great. But you know, the ghar ke nuske, as they say, or like how kaadha became popular in COVID.
So who knows, eventually democratization of healthcare.
Absolutely, why not? So on that note, more power to you. And thank you so much. I hope you achieve all this and more.
Thank you, Manasi.
And that brings us to the end of an informative and fun chat with none other than Dr. Ajinkya D.Y. Patil.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ajinkya. You know, you're a lovely friend, and thank you for taking out time for us and for sharing your motivating journey with us at Empower.
Thank you for having me, Meenakshi. And before my parting comments, I have watched you grow, evolve, and the wonderful work that you're doing, the
people
you're interviewing. So I wish you all the best. Godspeed.
Yes.
And you continue to grow and progress.
Thank you so much. Means
thank
a lot.
Thank you.
So thank you, my lovely listeners, as well, and for tuning in. Do check out all this and more fantastic videos, the podcast on Empower, and catch all the social media on Facebook and Instagram, Meenakshi Kuwadikar. Please feel free to email me anytime for anything on empowerbymeenakshi@gmail.com. And until then, until next time, keep smiling, keep shining, have a safe and fantastic week, everyone, and don't forget to own it.